Hey guys, before we get started, I have a couple quick news items that you definitely don't want to miss. There are still a few days left to register for the London Toy Photographers Meetup happening this September. You can find all of the details and the registration link on our website, toyphotographers.com. And if you enjoyed our chat last week about Voltron, make sure to enter our giveaway. We're giving one lucky winner a Voltron of their very own, and all you have to do to enter is follow us on Instagram at @toyphotographers_. And repost our giveaway announcement post with the hashtag toy_photographers_Voltron. You can enter up to 3 times, so don't miss your chance to win this awesome set. You're listening to the Toy Photographers Podcast, the official podcast of toyphotographers.com. I'm James Garcia, and on this show, I talk to photographers around the world who are turning Lego, action figures, miniatures, custom creations, and more into amazing works of art. This week, I spoke with Dan Leonard, the UK-based toy photographer behind the With Toys in Mind hashtag on Instagram. Dan started with Toys in Mind as a way to bring awareness for mental illness and show how toy photography can be a powerful tool for those suffering from things like depression and anxiety. I spoke with Dan not only about his history with toy photography, but why he created With Toys in Mind and the tremendous amount of support the project has received in our community. Enjoy the show. First of all, welcome to the show. I'm really excited to have you on, especially to talk about With Toys in Mind. Your project has been getting a lot of attention lately, and I think it's a really good cause and something that I really want to give some attention to listeners on this podcast. So thank you for coming on to the show and talking about that with me.
You're very welcome. It's been a weird one, and I'm sure we'll touch on it in a few moments. But yeah, it's just one of those things I sort of started, didn't really expect to sort of go anywhere or get, you know, connect with people, and it's kind of a bit crazy.
Yeah, well, congratulations. And you know, obviously you're not doing this just for yourself. It's become a widespread community thing, and I know that you started it because you wanted to raise awareness for mental health and for depression and anxiety, and I think you've done a really good job of that, and so I'm really excited to talk to you about that later.
Thank you.
Yeah, before we jump into that, though, I did want to, you know, interview you a little bit, because on top of doing this project, you're a toy photographer yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I read somewhere that you were interested in macro photography first, and then that kind of morphed into toy photography. What is your history with photography?
My history is sort of long-ranging. When I was 16, I took a two-year course at college, studied photography, and was drilled on lighting setups and darkroom stuff, which thankfully I don't have to do anymore because everything's digital.
Yeah.
But and then I sort of went away for that and sort of studied filmmaking at university. And again, you know, that kind of whole lighting stuff sort of still plays in with that. And then came out of university, I've sort of worked as a freelance filmmaker and sort of motion graphics animator for about 10 years now. And a couple of years ago, I decided to buy a new camera. I can't remember how I got interested in macro photography. I think I photographed a couple of bugs and went, oh, they look pretty cool. Do more of that. And then that went into toy photography. I think it was around the same time I started collecting Lego again. Because Lego was always one of those things that, as a child, I had a few sets, but it was something that was unattainable as a child because it was so expensive. And it would be one of those things I'd get a few small sets sort of for a Christmas or birthday.
Yeah, yeah. That was my experience too.
And then sort of I found myself working, you know, freelance filmmaker. I end up somehow with a lot of disposable income, which goes on Lego and now other toys. So yeah, I started sort of, when I buy new lenses and stuff, I test them out on sort of little Lego minifigs. And I was like, whoa, these look okay. And, you know, I started lighting them like I would a film set or a photo studio. And I was getting really happy with the results. It's like, okay, well, I'll post some of these on Instagram. And then as I started using the hashtags I use every day now, you know, they started getting noticed. And I discovered that there was literally thousands of people that had created a toy photography community.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it? How many people there are out there.
It's insanely cool, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember when I started, I thought, oh, I'm so unique, or I'm doing something so new and original. And then you jump on Instagram, and like you said, there are thousands of people out there doing this. It's really cool.
It is. It's such a supportive community, and I don't think I've ever had any negative feedback on a photo. I mean, I give myself a lot of negative feedback.
Oh, for sure. I do that myself too.
I am worst critic, but yeah, everyone, you know, is really, really nice and friendly, and yeah, it's just a really nice place.
Yeah, it's a really good community. I'm really happy to be part of it, and to see it respond so well to your With Toys in Mind project too has just been amazing.
Oh, incredible. Yeah.
I love that you brought up your background in film because your shots are very cinematic. Can you talk about how your background in film has influenced your toy photography?
Well, I studied digital film production at the University of Gloucestershire over here in the UK. And it was very much, I think it was around 60 to 80% practical course. So we were just thrown equipment and told to just go make things. Which was fantastic because, you know, didn't really have to. I mean, we had, you know, a few essays and stuff, but it was primarily just making films. And that kind of practice, I don't think you can just get.
Right. Yeah. You need a lot of hands-on experience to learn how to do it. Yeah.
And, you know, having access to, it was old equipment, but it was good equipment, and learning how to edit and sort of how shots are composed and things like that. And, you know, that again came in from, you know, my previous experience with photography, but this was all brand new, and the study of film and lighting, and it was just something I really got into and have not let up on since.
Yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, it's funny that when you first think about film and photography, I would think that they would be different, but then when you think about it, it is all just about light and composition, and a lot of the same techniques apply even at a macro level or a toy photography level.
Oh, completely. And we were always taught that, you know, every frame has to be as close to a photograph as you can make it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, those kind of lessons that were drilled into me about lighting and things like that have really, really helped me in my photography recently.
Yeah, I bet. It's one of those things, as I've talked to more people on this podcast, that's one of the biggest things I always hear. You know, I ask everybody if you had any advice or feedback to give to people, what would it be? And the number one thing they're always like, learn how to light things.
Yep.
Lighting is so important to photography. And it's just one of those things that either you know it before you come in, or you find that you have to learn it very quickly once you start.
Yeah. And the thing I've learned with toy photography is very different lighting. You have to scale everything down as if, you know, if you had big studio lights, they now scale down to, you know, 1:12 or 1:6 size.
Mm-hmm.
To get the right lighting and to make it look as real as possible.
You shoot a lot of Star Wars, Marvel, those kinds of properties.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of your biggest pop culture influences, and what makes you want to photograph those specifically?
I mean, Star Wars has always been a thing that has sort of gone through my life as, you know, many modern day nerds.
Yes.
Star Wars is essentially the Bible. But yeah, I firmly remember being introduced to Star Wars by an uncle of mine at around the age of 6, 7 or 8, I think I was. And he brought it up in a conversation. I was like, what's Star Wars? He was like, you haven't seen Star Wars. And immediately gave me 3 VHSs and told me to go and watch them immediately. And then, yeah, the love from that just sort of carried on. And I think it's something about the visuals of Star Wars. They're just so, I wouldn't say unique, because everyone, I think they are unique in a way. I think, yeah, you can look at a robot and you can look at a stormtrooper or a Jedi and instantly go, that's Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, plays, you know, that influences how I photograph things, because Star Wars has a certain look. And always has them, and that look travels through films, through games, through comics, and yeah, it really informs the style of lighting.
Yeah, absolutely. I was having a conversation with my wife about this, because we were watching, what was it, Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets that came out last year, and there's just something about that movie that just doesn't stick with you from a design standpoint, from a photography standpoint, whereas Star Wars for some reason does. There's just something about it that feels tactile and real. And what I love about Star Wars is it has this mix of what I would think advanced, you know, obviously advanced technology and stuff, but they are still all analog, you know. They have to carry Death Star plans on a floppy disk, basically.
Yeah. Everything feels grounded.
Yes.
Apart from the prequels, which are slightly less so, but even A Phantom Menace still feels like a Star Wars movie.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just something about the aesthetic and the design stuff that is more grounded, and I think translates really well to other forms of media, as you said. And then when we're trying to recreate those things ourselves, it's kind of easy to do because of that grounded nature.
Exactly.
In Star Wars,
we've already got those images in our head, and it's really easy to imagine a figure, you know, in a situation, whether it be indoors in a studio or outdoors, sort of whether it be a field or in some sand. You know, we know what that should look like.
have you liked the new stuff that's coming out, and have those visuals and design elements and stuff stuck with you the same way like the original trilogy has?
I really like the new Star Wars. I know there's a big sort of divide behind The Last Jedi, and I, you know, apart from a few sort of jokes that fall a little flat, I really like it as a film.
Yeah, I think me too. I love that movie.
The moving away from the sort of the traditional sort of structure and the lore of Star Wars, I thought was really good because it felt new and it felt fresh. I don't know, that's a really divisive sort of standpoint. just people are like, no, it's not Star Wars. And it's like, well, it could be.
Right, yeah, I think it is. But I know that there is a very vocal contingent of fans that don't like it, and that's unfortunate. But I noticed that you have a lot of the new characters and settings in your photography, like you photograph Rey and K2SO, and yeah. It seems like those new films do leave an impression on you, at least as an artist.
Oh, completely. And I think also the figures that have come out that Hasbro are bringing out at the moment, so Island Journey Rey, the Solo range, it wasn't up until recently that I started bought the figures that had the faces, because I felt they were never quite right. But up until sort of this Solo range, you know, they're fantastic face sculpts and mm-hmm. prints. Really, you know, they're nailing the characters.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I recently started collecting the Star Wars Black Series figures, and when I started, I just wanted to get droids, aliens, and stormtroopers for that same reason. I was like, yeah, I just don't find the other faces to be realistic. In the last year or two, right as that Solo wave was coming out, they updated their face sculpt technology.
Yeah,
and I noticed that they're starting. Yeah, and I noticed they're starting to re-release some of the old ones with new updated faces, and yeah, they look so much better that now I'm like, oh man, I gotta purchase some of those.
No, they're really, really good, and you can see sort of Hasbro are sort of running that through their Marvel Legends series as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's so many of those that I want to pick up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just there's so many figures I've just got on a list. Mm-hmm. And they're just adding to it daily.
Yeah, so if your toy photography started out with Lego, did you already collect other toys like these Star Wars and Marvel figures? Or once you got into toy photography, did you realize, I've got to pick some of these things up too? How did you kind of transition from one to the other?
It was mostly just seeing other people's work. Saying, okay, well, I can do this with Lego. And that looks great, and I really enjoy that. But if I had something that articulated properly and, you know, had a proper facial expression, I could make something, you know, even better. Mm-hmm. So I just stopped buying sort of these Marvel Legends and Black Series figures. And yeah, it just stemmed from there. And now I'm struggling for shelf space.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I have an office in our apartment, and it's already full. We moved from a one bedroom to a three bedroom, and one of the things was, great, now I'll have my own room to put all my toys and do my photography and stuff. And now I'm like, can I have some more space somewhere else? It grows faster than you would think, and it takes up space very quickly.
Definitely. I've only been doing this, well, sort of certainly photographing figures for the last 5 months. And yeah, it's gotten a bit out of hand. I don't know how to scale it back or stop.
Yeah, I wonder if there is a way. I think the only way to stop would be to stop, you know, the whole thing completely. And clearly we don't want to do that. So
yep.
In addition to your film and photo work, you're a graphic artist as well. And I know you have some other creative outlets. Do you find that they bleed into each other the way that your film and photography work have?
I think so. Yeah, I think whilst I haven't done it as much recently, I think probably because toy photography has taken so much of my time, I really do like illustrating. And again, that builds on the base of pop culture, and a lot of it is Star Wars and anime and Ghibli and things like that, you know, that have really, visuals that have really sort of bled into my mind. And I think that does go into my toy photography. You know, it's all still composition and posing. And yeah, I think it's a very similar practice. It's certainly toy photography. I never imagined it would take up so much of my time or want so much of my time, but I find myself going each evening feeling guilty that I'm not taking pictures.
Let's transition into With Toys in Mind. I do want to say up front that obviously, mental illness, depression, anxiety, they're very serious subjects. We're gonna try to handle them delicately here. I apologize if we do end up slipping or saying the wrong thing. That's not intentional at all. You and I both have dealt with depression and anxiety and have used toy photography as an outlet to help us cope with that and work through that. And so I think that obviously based on the reception to your project, we're not alone in that in this community. And I think it's really important to spread the word and spread awareness, let people know that they're not alone. And I do just want to say that if anybody out there is struggling or wants help, we are here for you. People are here for you. You have a whole community of photographers that want to help you. And if you need to reach out to somebody, feel free to do that. I think it's very important to admit when you need help and you're struggling. So I wanted to say that out the gate, that this is a very serious thing and we do treat it seriously.
Completely agreed. I think, yeah, it's what I've tried to do with the project, and we'll get into sort of the hows and whatnot in a minute. But yeah, I've tried to sort of keep it positive, keep it interesting, and sort of hopefully teach both people with a mental illness and people without mental illness, you know, how important it is and how it should be talked about. Because I think that's the first step, is talking. And it's often something that is so difficult for, and it was certainly difficult for me at first, was that first step of saying, I'm not well. You know, my brain isn't working properly.
Yeah, I had it explained to me once, my wife explained this to me, that when one of your organs isn't working or sick, you know, you go to a doctor and you get help for that. And your brain is an organ just the same way your heart is an organ, your lungs are an organ. And it's something that if it's sick or it's not working properly, it's not shameful to admit that and to accept that and try to get help for it. I think it's really unfortunate that we live in a world where mental illness is so stigmatized, is so looked down upon. People are ashamed of it or embarrassed by it or scared to seek help or admit that they need help. And I think that's very unfortunate.
Completely. And it's just one of those things that, and men especially, it's seen as a weakness. There is no harm or wrong in feeling emotions and being overwhelmed sometimes.
Yeah, life is overwhelming for men and women, and it's not, you know, it's not bad to say, yeah, I can't handle this, whatever it may be, you know, whether it is something big and monumental and world changing or something small that is really eating at you. I think, you know, there's a wide spectrum as far as mental illness goes and the ways it can affect you. And as you've written about before and talked about before in your posts, it's unfortunately an invisible illness. So it's really hard to see it and for other people to see it. And I know for myself for a long time, I thought, oh, well, I'm fine. You know, I'm just sad right now, or I'm just stressed right now, or I just need to toughen up or deal with it or suck it up. And it took a long time for me personally to just say, wow, I am dealing with depression. I am anxious. I am struggling with this and I do need help. I know that you've talked about your story before, and obviously, you know, I don't want to go into it in too much detail, you know, but can you talk a little bit about your struggle with depression, anxiety, and how you've used toy photography to work through that?
Definitely. So sort of growing up, certainly in my teens, I mean, I remember being depressed. I didn't acknowledge at the time I was depressed. But looking back on, you know, those emotions and sort of my actions and sort of how I would isolate myself from crowds and things like that through anxiety, but again, didn't acknowledge it. I think as a teenager and listening to, you know, bands like Nirvana, being fans of films like Donnie Darko, you see other teenagers being sort of moody and isolating themselves, and you think it's sort of a rite of passage and, you know, normal, and you don't really... Certainly at the time, there wasn't any kind of, oh, maybe you've got depression. And it was more just a, oh, you know, maybe when I get in my 20s, things will just balance out.
Right. Just hormones right now. That's all.
Yeah. And I'm sure that happens for other people. I'm sure there are moody teenagers that, you know, when they get over those hormones, become regular, you know, fully functioning adults. But that wasn't the case for me. And I went through a lot of my 20s sort of feeling those same feelings, pushing them down in the good moments of life. And, you know, I had a few years where everything was really pushed down and, you know, nothing was affecting me. And then I went through a breakup when I was about 25, and all those things that have been bubbling just kind of rose to the top and sort of went, ha, we're here, and sort of dragged me down. Yeah, I sank into a very deep depression, isolated myself, friends and family, my work suffered. Must have been a horrible person to work with because I snapped at people. I was rude. I built up an ego about my work because it was the only thing I could hold on to. So it felt that, you know, this was the only thing I had. It was precious. How dare anyone criticize it and try and take that away from me? It got to a point where I just had to see someone. I had to, you know, and I ended up speaking to a friend and just saying, stuff's not right. And they gave me a number of their therapists. They said, well, things weren't right for me. I was like, I never knew. And they was like, well, you know, that started to open up the thought that, you know, lots of people are going through this and no one's talking about it. You know, his friend had a therapist and, you know, I didn't know about it. Maybe we should be talking about this more. And I saw an emotional therapist who helped me sort of manage and sort of go through 20 years of sort of frustration and just map it out and see where things had started and try to close those arcs and start afresh.
Yeah, that can be amazing, can't it? When I've seen a therapist too that and has done that, did the same kind of thing for me. You know, I was dealing with a lot of things in my family or frustrations with that kind of thing, and I had always just thought those things were normal, or you know, I was the problem there or whatever. And a therapist can really help be a third party in that, and somebody disconnected from whatever you're going through, and look at it from a critical point of view and say, well, you know, this is kind of what I think the reasoning behind this behavior is, or your feelings. And
yeah, no, it was really empowering. And just sort of mapping everything out on a timeline and being told, this is why you feel this way. Going, oh, okay, that makes sense. Really closed sort of those sort of emotional, sort of almost like tethered string. It was like, it just really, it's like, oh, okay, that's why I feel like that. I can move on from that now. And obviously it takes time. It's not quite as easy as that, but it starts a process. And I would recommend to anyone struggling with any kind of emotional difficulty, obviously go see a medical professional and get advice from them. But a therapist was the thing that helped me the most. And speaking to people like yourself, you know, who would agree. It's definitely a method of medicine that really works.
Yeah, and it's unfortunately another one of those things that stigmatized, you know, going to therapy. I think we're trained from TV and pop culture and things like that to see like, oh, you only go to therapy when things are really, really bad, or you're struggling in your marriage or whatever it may be, and that it's looked down upon as this weakness, you know, that you have to, oh, you see a therapist. You know, and it's actually a lot more people see therapists than you think, as you mentioned. It's one of those things that has definitely changed my life, and I think can be very helpful for even people that aren't dealing with mental illness, just having a therapist, because life is so stressful and there's just so many different things that happen to us throughout our life that it might be nice to talk to somebody. And a therapist is great for that.
Definitely. And really, one of the first things my therapist told me to do was to go and watch The Sopranos. It didn't make sense at the time when she said it, but I watched the first sort of 4 or 5 episodes. It's like, oh yeah, therapy can work. And it's kind of for everyone. Because if you can see this big, strong Italian, you know, dude going to see a therapist, you know, sense that anyone can do it.
Yeah, I was actually thinking of The Sopranos as I was talking about you know, how therapy is perceived. And in that show, you know, all he's afraid to talk to people or admit that he's going to therapy. You know, he hides it for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think that's unfortunate because, you know, it clearly helps him. And I think the show does a really good job of showing how powerful therapy can be. And I think that's a positive thing. As your project has shown, we really do need to spread the word about it and get people thinking about it more and accepting it. And I think we're coming to a point, hopefully, in society where these things are becoming more acceptable. And I think that as we've witnessed with other things like the Me Too movement or things like that, people are not as afraid now to speak up. And I think it's really powerful to see that there's a wide variety of people that are dealing with similar things that you are, and mm-hmm. it can be really powerful to team up and lean on each other as well.
Yeah, and it's certainly for me, even making these posts is quite a cathartic experience. Mm-hmm. It's like a mini bit of therapy, sort of writing these feelings and sort of little stories down and going, oh yeah, that feels like it's off my chest now again.
Right. Yeah, let's talk about that because, you know, part of the project is using toy photography as an outlet for these kinds of feelings. How has toy photography helped you and what do you do specifically with toy photography to use it as an outlet for depression and anxiety?
For me, it's a sense of when things are sort of building stress upon me, like work and things like that. And these are things that I can't always control.
Mm-hmm.
Toy photography for me is one of those things I can control. So I can pick up a toy, I can put it on my little table in the corner of my living room, and I can work out how best to pose it. I can build the lighting around that and completely control every element of what I'm doing to a point. And it really relaxes me. And you're sort of playing around with camera settings and practical effects and just having a bit of fun with it as well. Yeah, it's a really nice process.
Yeah, and I find for myself that it really helps me just kind of escape everything else for a little while. Mm-hmm. It really does suck you in, you know, and I kind of the blinders come on and everything else just kind of fades into the background. I'm able to really focus on what I'm doing and forget about work or forget about whatever it might be that's stressing me out and yeah, just focus on toy photography, even if it's just a half hour. Even if it's just yep. 5 minutes of trying a pose or testing a shot or something, or if it's a couple hours, if I'm really deep into it, just that escape can be really helpful and powerful.
Oh, completely. And it's less intense than I find my illustration, because with my illustration, it's something that I'll spend 6 to 8 hours on a single piece.
Oh, wow.
A lot of that, because of just the way I try and do things, I will often do that in one sitting, which is, you know, it is that kind of being sucked in and ignoring everything around you. And after sort of 6-8 hours sort of coming away from something and going, oh, I've created something, but also I haven't eaten or been to the toilet in a while.
Yeah, and I've been hunched over my desk and my back is killing me or whatever it might
exactly.
be.
And toy photography is such it's there's almost an instant gratification with it. Certainly shooting digital as well. Like, you can take a picture, you can look at that picture, and it's you can either work on that or then it's done.
Right.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, knowing you've taken that shot is such a rare thing as well. And it's such a beautiful thing to look down the lens and go, this is going to be amazing. Click the thing, it appear, it be amazing. Mm-hmm. And then go edit it. And it's like, look, this is amazing. Look what I've done. Then putting it online and everyone saying really nice things about it is such a nice process.
Yeah, absolutely. And that community part of it is such a big piece, just because you do get instant feedback. And I, you know, obviously that's not why we do these things, to get likes on a post or comments on a post. But there, it does feel good when people appreciate your work and like your work and share it and comment and join in on the discussion or ask you how you did certain things. I feel like in today's age with social media, there's a whole other part now of art in general. And yep. that community interaction is such a big integral piece, at least for, you know, the people that are on social media, I guess.
Yeah. And I found the toy photography community to be completely different. And it might have just been that I didn't really find the corner of the sort of the illustration art community that is the same, but I found that everyone is more open to speaking to each other and to commenting and liking and asking questions and just generally being supportive, which is why I felt it was a really good sort of platform to start the With Toys in Mind project.
Yeah, let's jump into that. For people that may not be aware of what it is yet, can you just give an outline of what With Toys in Mind is?
Yeah, it's a project I started a couple of months ago now, well, about over a month. It was the beginning of June 2018. And one day I was sort of in a bit of a bad mood, feeling, you know, I was questioning sort of what I was doing with my life, which usually happens once a month. And I decided I needed to do something both creative, but something I could really sink my teeth into. So it was more than just a single image. It was going to be a project that would either build a story or would just last a long time. hopefully. So I was thinking, okay, well, I could do sort of like a series of photos of, like, make a mini film through photos. And then somehow the idea of sort of doing a project that focused around mental health awareness just popped into my mind, and I instantly got excited about it, and it felt right, and it got me out of my funk, and I couldn't wait to start taking photos for it. And I started, you know, I instantly messaged my girlfriend. I was like, I'm gonna start this thing, I'm gonna do a thing. And she was like, oh, that sounds great. It's like, I don't know what to call it. So we sort of went back and forth and discussed a few hashtags, and then she was like, why don't you put these sort of ideas out to the community and see what they think. So I did the first initial sort of image, just with a sort of asking for feedback, sort of an asking for what shall I call this project. I gave sort of three ideas, and those with toys in mind. Mental health articulated, which was my favorite.
I like that. That's a good one. I saw that on your post.
Yeah, and I can't remember what the other one was. I think it was just awareness through toys, I think was the other one. Which is a little bit on the nose. But yeah, everyone chose with toys in mind, which I was kind of gutted about because it was my girlfriend's idea. but yeah, it's something I really like now. And I think it's a really solid little hashtag, and it feels unique. And yeah, it all sort of started from there.
Great. And so it started just for yourself then? It's just something you wanted to do, and then you involved the community later? Or
it was one of those, so I started thinking about it for myself. So it's like, okay, well, I could discuss my own experiences, and was like, well, that sort of starts one side of the conversation, but how do I get people to engage with the other? You know, how do I get to talk to me? And being as it's based on Instagram, you know, what better way than with their own images? I then built that into the post, sort of asking people, you know, if you're interested in posting, you know, just do it under this hashtag. And everyone's, and lots of people just like, oh, that's a great idea. I'll start on that immediately. And I think within 2 hours, there were one or two images that started coming in, and that got me really excited. And then over the next few days, there were 10, 20, 30. And yeah, it started to turn into a thing.
Yeah, now looking at it today, at the time of our recording, it's at over 600 images. And there are so many people on board with it. And you've written about it now for our website, toyphotographers.com. You've written about it for the Exclu Collective. Has the reception been what you expected, or has it exceeded your expectations?
It's by far exceeded my expectations. I originally thought, I'll do this for a month. And I imagined that sort of after the first couple of weeks of people being interested, it would be one of those things that sort of drift out of people's minds, because that's, you know, what happens with a lot of things. And it hasn't. It sort of stayed there, and I don't know whether it's because I've, you know, you guys had me write a blog post, and, you know, that's kept things going, and same Exclu Collective, you know, I'm really thankful to you both for, you know, having me, you know, on your platforms talking about this. Yeah, it's just quite mad.
Yeah, it's been really fun to see it take a life of its own, just from the sidelines. I have been really busy lately with work and stuff, so I haven't been able to participate as much as I would want to. But just seeing all of the posts and seeing people's stories and reading about what other people's experiences have been, and seeing the comments and people giving their support for other people, and it's really, really cool to see the community really grab this thing and accept it and take it in and give it a life of its own.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see how it evolves, because just last week I sort of, after the first month, sort of held a sort of feedback session through a post, and there was sort of, what do you want me to do more? You know, it's the first time I've done anything like this, or engaged, you know, a large crowd of people on social media. So, you know, I had no idea whether I was doing the right thing or the wrong thing, or whether I could do things better. And a lot of people were like, well, maybe we should do themes. And I had done sort of, I'd been posting sort of optional themes in my stories, but turns out not a lot of people look at stories, or as many people think. So people, I've started putting those as a post now, and there's now an optional weekly one, and a sort of a monthly theme, which people are contributing to under a specific hashtag, which I hope works out. If not, we'll just go back to just doing the weekly one, which seems to be doing really well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that feedback part of it, and the reaching out to the community, and the themes in general. How do you pick the themes, and what is your overall goal with doing it theme-based?
I think the themes is one of those things that, obviously, you've got a load of people engaged, but I know it's tricky to come up with ideas for things. So if you can nudge people with a word or a, you know, an idea, I, you know, I figured that would really help them along. So that's the sort of feeling behind the optional theme is, if you haven't got any ideas or things that you're not sure about, you know, here's this optional weekly theme, and you know, maybe that'll give you some inspiration. But mm-hmm. you know, obviously, because it's optional, you can do pretty much whatever you want around the subject of mental health.
Yeah, we kind of touched on this a little bit, but I want to give it a little more time. Is the idea itself behind the project and the message that you're trying to convey, as you've mentioned, you want it to be very positive, very supportive, not focus on too many things like suicide or alcoholism or violence or anything like that. Can you talk about that approach itself?
Yeah, I think the subject of mental illness, whether it be depression, anxiety, PTSD, schizophrenia, any kind of like dementia or anything like that, they're all very delicate issues.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly things like suicide need to be handled really tactfully. And as soon as I started the project, I had this sort of image of people photographing figures hanging themselves or, you know, slitting their own wrists. And I didn't want to see that. I didn't want that to be what the project was about. I wanted it to be positive and thought-provoking and, more than anything, a conversation through pictures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's important.
Yeah, definitely. And most of the images have been fantastic, and you know, no one's really touched on anything very serious, because I think it's certainly I'm afraid to touch on them, because I don't want to handle them badly.
Right.
So I really, any of my images and messages are always based in my own experiences. I wouldn't want to tell someone, you know, bad advice. I can only base what I say on what I've been through. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not a medical professional. I never pretend to be an expert on this subject, but I can talk about what I've done and, you know, how I felt.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to go about it, because like you said, you're not a professional and it is such a delicate subject, and this is more of a way to just bring awareness on the subject and to get people involved in talking about it and thinking about it in certain ways. So I think that's a great approach, because it does leave room for it to be a supportive, helpful thing.
Completely, and that's all I really wanted to be, is that community support. And people, you know, are more than welcome to discuss those serious things if they feel the need to. But yeah, it needs to be from their own experience. It needs to be, you know, handled delicately.
You have a Q&A on your Instagram page that outlines the project and some of the, not necessarily rules, but just the what you're going for. So I wanted to ask a few of those to you here on the podcast. So first of all, do the images need to be on the subject of mental illness?
They don't, but it certainly helps when, so every Monday I go through and I select it was going to be 3 favorite images, but that was too difficult for me. So it's now favorite 10 images. And it's certainly helped, because the way I pick those images is I'll look at the photo and I'll look at the message. And if the photo really says something to me, that merits that image. And again, if the message really says something, you know, that really gives it a good standing to be part of that selection. But if you just want to use the tag, I'm more than happy for you to contribute, as long as the image is, you know, isn't offensive in any way or doesn't really go against any of the sort of the themes of mental illness.
And do you need to have mental illness in order to talk about it or contribute photos?
You don't. I think mental illness touches a lot of people, whether they've got it or not, whether they know someone with it. You know, it just needs to be handled very delicately. If you, you know, again, going back to those images of suicide and drug abuse and alcoholism, yes, they are all, you know, intertwined with mental illness. And a lot of people will see that as what mental illness is, but it really isn't. So as long as there's nothing like that, then you're more than welcome to contribute.
Awesome. And then the final question on here was, what will happen to my images if I use the tag? As you mentioned, you go through and you pick your favorites. Do you just watch this tag every single day and look at everybody's posts?
I will go through it probably once or twice a day, depending on how busy I am. And it is, you know, mostly to see what people are doing. But I'll make my sort of final selection for those pictures on a Sunday evening, Monday morning, and pull them out, and I'll pair them with the strongest bit of message. So I can often not put the whole message in the photo, but I'll usually pull that out and I'll overlay it onto the photo and stick the With Toys in Mind banner and the account name on a picture Just so it is clearly not my work. You know, I want to give full credit to the people who are creating these pictures and show some of the message that they're trying to get across with it. So just to differentiate, I want to, you know, that's why I put them within the significant banners and things like that.
Yeah, I think it's awesome that you do that. And I love that you pull out a little quote that's relevant to the theme or something that somebody maybe said about the image or something. I think that really helps just like at a glance when I'm going through my Instagram feed, really helps me realize, oh, this is part of the project. This is what the image was going for. Because it's so easy, if I'm not paying attention to whose photos I'm looking at on my Instagram feed, to just scroll through and be like, oh, that's cool, that's cool, that's cool. So to see that banner on there, I think is really cool. And I love that, like I said, that you do pull out little quotes, because then I can stop and really think about it myself just very quickly.
Yeah, and I think it was a really important thing for me to do, just to pull that out. And it actually stems from a project I did, like a film project from a couple of years ago. I made a series of films for a company called Wex Photographic, and it was all about exploring the power of photography with five photographers. And each one started with a quote, which was the title, which was, you know, either photography changed my life or the power of storytelling and things like that. And that method sort of really stuck with me with this project. It's like, that's what needs to happen. That's how you get people's attention.
Real quickly, too, I want to ask about your images. You shoot a lot with K2SO, the droid from Rogue One. What is it about him in particular that has kind of made him a mascot of this project for you?
I mean, it goes back to that first day when I created, there was this masthead image of With Toys in Mind, for me anyway, and certainly the one I first posted was this sort of depressed looking K2SO with sort of young Goku coming up sort of next to him, just in a, you know, are you okay sort of pose, sort of looking like he wanted to talk to him, and, you know, had a cup of mug of coffee or tea in his hand that he was offering up. And it was a really strong image that just came to me and, you know, fixed in my mind. I was like, that's it. That's what this project's going to be about. That's the image that encapsulates everything I want to create with it. And, you know, K2SO is actually the first Black Series figure I bought. Really?
Yeah.
He's a really cool figure. And I actually bought him to illustrate because I, you know, I really wanted to draw K2SO. So I thought, okay, well, I saw on Amazon he wasn't too expensive. And so I thought he looked really sort of well designed. So I bought him and I ended up drawing him. And it's, well, I'm going to take some photographs as well. And I found that he poses really well and he's really emotive. And as much as you can make him look sad, you can make him look really sassy. I think it's because he doesn't really have a face. So his head movement, however you move his head, gives him a different emotion. So if you put it to an angle, it's the side, he looks sarcastic. If you point it down, he looks sad. You know, up, he looks hopeful. It's a really, you can project a lot of emotion onto him.
Yeah, which is incredible, just because, like you said, he doesn't have a face. And so just using that body language to communicate those things is a tough thing to do. But with a figure like him, it comes pretty easily, actually.
Yeah, and second to that, I often use sort of Kid Goku, one of the SH figure arts figures. And he's sort of the opposite in sort of an emotional state, because he comes with so many happy little faces. He's this little ray of light that sort of balances that darker character. So he sort of represents the hope and the good side of mental illness and mental health awareness.
Yeah, that's what I love about that banner image, is that you could have very easily just had it been sad K2SO, but adding Goku in there, and how in the first one, he's got, you know, the coffee mug, and he's had his hand on K2SO's shoulder, like you said, that supportive, like, hey, are you okay? That's really the message behind the project itself. So I think that's a great representation of the themes you're trying to go for.
Yeah, and sort of going down the line, that it's sort of split into, and I need to do more of it with K2SO and Goku. It's just, I think I've started to run out of ideas. I need to generate some more with those two. But yeah, I sort of started to split it with, okay, well, these sort of, when I want to represent stress and anxiety and depression, I can use K2SO on his own and put him in situations that are uncomfortable, but also ridiculous and humorous in some ways. And then when I want to, you know, the other side of that is, you know, the more positive side, like, what do you, the things that you do to sort of get out of depression, you know, your creative outlets. And, you know, I've had, you know, I usually bring Goku in for that. So they're doing things together. So it becomes a much more joyous activity.
To wrap up, we've talked a bit about how people can get involved, but just to recap, if people want to join in on the conversation, submit their own photos, see what's going on, how can people do that?
Basically, with Toys in Mind project, all you have to do to get involved is create your images and tag them with the With Toys in Mind tag. There's also a monthly theme, which for the theme of July is anxiety, and the tag for that is hashtag WTIM underscore anxiety. And most of the what we've discussed and sort of the rules per se are all in a story highlights on my Instagram page. But certainly any questions, feel free to message me and ask.
Cool. And what is your Instagram handle so that people can find you?
My handle is at Tiny Epic Photos.
Well, thank you again for coming on to the show and talking about this with me and giving me your history on your own toy photography. It was really fun to hear your story. And as I mentioned in the episode, I think this is an amazing project that you've started. And I thank you for doing it and managing it in such a great way. And I'm excited to see where it goes from here.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I really, you know, it's blown me away, the sort of response to this. And it's clearly becoming its own thing. And I'm really happy with that.
Thank you so much for listening. You can find new episodes of this podcast and daily articles on creativity and toy photography on our website, toyphotographers.com. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. We also ask that you please leave us a 5-star review. That'll help spread the word about the show and help us get noticed. You can find us on Facebook at Toy Photographers and on Instagram at _toyphotographers_. Music for this week's episode is courtesy of freemusicarchive.org. And finally, you can reach out to us with comments, concerns, recommendations, etc. at toyphotographypod@gmail.com. I'm James Garcia. You can find my work every single week at toyphotographers.com, as well as on Twitter at TheRealJames, real spelled R-E-E-L, on Instagram at TheRealJames23, and on my website, TheRealJames.com. Thanks so much for listening. I'll see you guys next week.